Chair Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is one of our own senators, Senator Jungbauer.
Good morning, members, and I see we're absent because every time I'm the chaplain, it seems like people are worried about hugs. I promised you no hugs till the end of session, the waning portions of session. So, and then we're going to do a night where we're going to sing, you know, Can You Feel the Love Tonight, things like that. So, members, today I wanted to share a few more scriptures on love, just to get us thinking about that, because sometimes I think that we're just not cohesive on that, although I think we get better. The longer I'm here, the more I do feel the love from everybody and on both sides. So Mark 12:31 says, "Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these." Romans 13:10 says, "Love does no harm to its neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law." And 1 John 3:18 says, "Children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and in truth." So let's pray. Father God, teach us this day to love each other as you command. Cause all of our actions as legislators and staff to be uplifting to each other and the citizens of Minnesota. As we seek wisdom for the answers to these problems of the day, give us the peace and knowledge necessary to move ahead with due haste. Bless us and our families at home. Thank you for calling each of us here to be part of the solution for such a time as this. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thank you. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Folby, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Ress, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. There's no printed agenda this morning, but we're going to be taking up some general orders bills this morning. Without objection, there's Senate bill introductions on today's agenda. There's two of them. Without objection, first reading of Senate introductions.
Mr. President,
Pogemiller.
On motions, are we on motions?
We're on motions.
I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Ms. Chairman, there's a list on the members' desks. Looks like about 15 bills. There is a second list coming, and I would like to designate this list one as for today's consideration. Senator Anderson would like hers to move down the list. Senator Roebling is not here, so it looks like I have the honor of doing the first bill.
Oh, we could move you down a little bit if you'd. Okay, the first bill on general orders this morning will be number 74 of general orders, Senate File 1117, Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move it when this committee do arise, Senate File 1117 be recommended to pass.
Senator Pogemiller, discussion on your bill.
Thank you. Members, Senate File 1117 is a bill that I believe the President may have had a session or so ago. And this is a bill that former President Jack Davies has been suggesting for a number of years. And it basically deals with an issue that arises out of the 1972 constitutional amendment that dealt with annual sessions and the limitation on the amount of time that the legislature can be in. Previous to that constitutional amendment, there was actually a number of legislative days listed in the Constitution. And for some reason, when this limit on Constitution was put in and created the annual sessions, the 120-day legislative days was left in the Constitution. As you know, we spend a lot of time, while we're here, January through May, we have to have three-day resolutions to not meet every third day, which may not be apparent to members. We are very careful to match with the House so that we don't use up legislative days too quickly for over the two-year period. There's a limit on the total number because of this 120 days. And so we actually have two limits. We have the deadline of, I believe it's May 18th this year, but there's kind of this sub-limit of number of days that you can meet within that period. And it doesn't seem to make any sense to have that limit internal, because that clock ticks on that on a day when the House meets and the Senate doesn't, or the Senate meets and the House doesn't. And so what this bill proposes to do is to redefine a legislative day to say that it only occurs when a second or third reading on a bill or an adoption of a resolution takes place. That would free us up to meet, take bill introductions, or process committee reports without that counting as a legislative day. Keep in mind that we still have the limitation of May 18th, so this won't create longer legislative sessions. What this will do is just give us a little more flexibility while we're here to perhaps just gather to take bill introductions and not have that count as a legislative day under the Constitution. So, members, I think this is just an update to where we're at. It will just allow a little more flexibility, but it assures that any day where we meet and actually act on a proposal and vote on it, that will count as a legislative day. If it's a day where we just come in and process introductions or committee reports between committees, then that would not have to count as a legislative day. This can be done by law because we have the authority to define a legislative day. And so I would stand for questions. I believe it's just a matter of flexibility. I believe the House is interested. I'm not sure that they're going to process it this year, but they're also talking with their desk to see if they think it's a good idea. This will create, if we do adopt this, both the House and the Senate, this will create some procedural issues at the desk that I'm sure they can accommodate. Even though slow comes change comes slowly to the Senate. And so I'm just pretty certain that we can accommodate the way we print the journal and so forth. So I would stand for questions and would appreciate member support.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1117? See Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Is it Chair? Chair today?
Chair.
Chair. Thank you, Chair Metzen, Senator Pogemiller, and just to clarify, I believe, and I think most of us believe, that the legislature needs some level of pressure, especially with respect to end dates. Would this bill then simply allow, typically, as you mentioned, we kind of meet Monday and Thursday and you match up with the House so as to not use up a day, but this would then allow, generally speaking, the flexibility. We could meet 3 days a week, 4 days a week, I guess, on the floor, but the end date, that date certain in May, would not otherwise be affected. Is that true?
Correct, Senator Senjum. Mr. Chairman, correct, Senator Senjum. In addition, we would be, we could have just a couple procedural day, for example, where we just met and processed committee reports or took bill introductions. And I think what would happen early in the session is we'd mostly just have bill introductions. And so those days wouldn't count really. But it does not change the end date. It would not release us from the pressure to get our work done.
Senator?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pogemiller, would, for instance, example be if the House, I don't know what the House is doing today, but were they not meeting at all, then this day would not count. Is that right?
Senator Pogemiller.
Today would count because we are going to vote on bills in Committee of the Whole. And so this day would count. There will be second and third readings, second readings at least. Dan, Mr. Wolf is saying no, so I think today would count. Okay, Mr. Chairman, today would count not because of general orders. It would count because we plan on taking and have the committee report on health and human services and giving its second reading. So that would today would count. And the reason for that was we could take the committee report from rules today and not take the second reading and it wouldn't count, but then that would not accommodate the want to take up the human service bill on Monday. So if there's a second or third reading, the day counts. But if you do anything short of second and third reading, then the day would not count.
Okay. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Pogemiller. I guess fundamentally, in listening to you describe this bill, my sense was that you think we need more time here. That for some reason there's bottlenecks in the process or in the calendar. You know, for instance, we started this session in January. My general thought is that we could do a lot more work earlier in a session, but I'm not sure that it's the definition of what a legislative day is. For instance, if we don't meet in floor session, but our committees are working, committees are where most of the work is done. I guess I keep getting back to the same question of, I'm not sure what you see the bottlenecks being, and I guess more fundamentally, you know, we always end up with this traffic jam at the end, and I think that's more a function of our rules. The budget deadlines that we set, and not so much the definition of what a legislative day is.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Sir, Michelle, I believe that's correct what you just said. The kind of the bunching up at the end does happen generally because of general work avoidance. People, all of us, tend not to make a decision until we have to. But this would not extend. The intent of this and the what would happen here is this would not extend the amount of time we're here. It would give us a little more flexibility so that early in the session, we could come in and process committee reports between committees, and that could literally speed us up early in the session because now we only meet Mondays and Thursdays. And we could literally meet Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, we could just process between committees, which could get us earlier hearings in those committees, potentially on bills. That's what I think would be the advantage of this. This could speed up the work early in the session because there's a tendency to avoid using those days early in the session because there's no bills on the floor yet, and you don't want to use a legislative day too much because you could run out of time at the end of the session because you need it because you have so many things on general orders. So I think this actually could help us process our work quicker, and it might allow us to even get earlier committee deadlines because then the excuse wouldn't be, well, the bill is going to four committees, and what we always hear is, well, I can't get a hearing in that committee yet because it won't get to us till after next Thursday. That's what we hear on Monday. And so we could just say, no, it'll be to you by Tuesday afternoon because we're going to refer it immediately. We're going to come in session, have a brief little session, and refer the bill. And it wouldn't be just one bill. It would be a lot of bills. And it just seems to me this actually could streamline the system because you really only want to meet on days. And the way we've tried to do this since I've been leader is we've tried to figure out a way to consolidate things and not spend time on the floor unless we were going to try to get some things done. And I think this would help. I think it would help.
Further discussion, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Pogemiller. I think it's an important discussion. I keep coming back to the need for earlier deadlines, earlier targets, public deadlines and public targets as maybe being the most, maybe that would be the biggest kind of procedural reform that we could do. Here we are working on Saturday. And a lot of members would prefer that we'd done some of this work earlier. So I'm just skeptical about how redefining legislative day gets to kind of those more basic inefficiencies in the process that we've struggled with again yet this session.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I just want to say I agree with Senator Michelle that there are other things that could help. I absolutely agree with him, and this bill doesn't solve those issues, but I think it does give us a little more flexibility.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1117? Seeing none, Senator Pogemiller renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1117 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders is number 35 on general orders, Senate File 484, Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a Food Safety and Defense Task Force bill. It was brought to me by the Department of Agriculture. Really, Section 1 clarifies that defense is part of the duties of the Food Safety and Defense Task Force. It was needs to be named that to comply with the federal standards for the naming. Section 2 deals with the Organic Advisory Task Force. It extends the sunset and does a few other things. It directs the Commissioner of Ag to consult with officials from the U of M in making appointments, and it adds that the task force is advisory to the U of M. It specifies that post-secondary research institution member is from the U of M and adds an additional at-large member and one retailer of organic products and makes a number of clarifying changes. Section 3 is just a deadline for appointments. It is a non-controversial Department of Ag bill, and I would ask members for their support.
Further discussion on Senate File 484. Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, did Senator Laurie move that when this committee do arise that Senate File 484 be recommended to pass?
I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 484 be recommended to pass.
All in favor? No, it's, Senator Laurie renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 484 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. We're going to take up number 113 on general orders, which is Senate File 713 at Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 713 be recommended to pass.
Okay. Discussion on your bill, Senator Roebling.
Members, this is a bill that is designed to try and find some cost savings in state government by providing an employee incentive program to our employees. What it proposes to do is have the Commissioner of Finance, which is soon to become the Commissioner of Minnesota Budget and Management, set up a program whereas employees could submit suggestions for how they believe we could save money in our system, and they would be rewarded by getting 10% of the documented savings. They'd have to be documented, or up to $2,500 in the first year of the savings program. And it doesn't cost anything, because if we didn't have them come up with the ideas, we wouldn't have any savings or any money paid out. Also, to make sure that this, that each supervisor or commissioner of a different agency believes that it truly is a cost savings measure, the payment would have to come out of their appropriation. So it isn't just a slush fund where they think that they could pull from. It has to come out of their budget. So that way we can make sure. I received this idea from the private sector, which has been successful in operating some of these initiatives for employees. There's been a great deal of brainstorming that has been done. Sometimes they have a really intense, like, six-week program where they'll run it, and teams will get together and try and think of things to do, or individuals can do it. I know it does have the support of some of the local state unions have been supporting it, and I just ask your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 713. Senator, seeing none, Senator Roebling renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 713 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill, number 117 on general orders, House File 523, Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 402 be recommended to pass.
I think it's House File.
House File
523.
And a question, Mr. Chair, procedure. Since I would like to move the Senate language, should I just proceed with the Senate File 402 as it's been posted? Should I?
The Senate language is in the House file, I guess so.
Very good. Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So if I could address this bill, House File 523, Senate File 402 is sort of a cleanup bill to a bill that we passed last year on teacher background checks. And it was going to require school districts to contact the Board of Teaching prior to hiring an employee to make sure that they reviewed the information in their files related to sexual misconduct or attempted sexual misconduct. And this policy is to go in effect in May of 2009. Well, as they've prepared for that, the Board of Teaching has come across some instances where they're having to use sort of a judgment as to, is this sexual misconduct? Is it not? It isn't very specific. And so they have asked that we change the language in this bill, which actually strengthens the current law, so that at this time, a school district is to ask and be given all the information that is in the Board of Teaching file, which is public, with the exception of court-ordered child support or maintenance payments. And this will allow a school district to review all that material. It's something that many school districts are doing now. But for those who are not, it makes them aware of situations that they just may want to be aware of before they hire a teacher. So I would urge your support.
Further discussion on House File 523. Seeing none, Senator Saltzman renews her motion that when this committee do arise, House File 523 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on general orders is number 70 on general orders, Senate File 1431, Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Senate File 1431.
Make your motion, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1431 be recommended to pass.
Okay, now an explanation, Senator Tomassoni.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is an auto dealership uniform expenses deduction from wages bill. And what the bill does is it makes a small change to the statute to allow employers and employees in auto dealerships to continue to use uniform rental and laundry services. It's not controversial. Everybody has agreed to it. The current law is unclear as to whether the current practice for renting and laundering uniforms is okay, and the current law allows employers who require employees to purchase uniforms to make payroll deductions for the cost of the uniform not to exceed $50. However, the auto industry does not require employees to purchase uniforms. Rather, employers and employees split the cost of a service which rents and launders the uniforms on an ongoing basis. So the $50 cap in current law is unclear when it comes to the ongoing expense. Is it $50 per deduction, per paycheck, per month, per year total? So the Department of Labor and Industry agreed that the current law was unclear when applied to ongoing rental services. So this is a small change in the law that will allow current practice to continue. Appreciate your support.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 1431? Seeing none, Senator Tomasoni renews his motion when this committee to arise, Senate File 1431 be recommended to pass. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on general orders is number 115 on general orders, Senate File 666. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I move when this committee to arise, Senate File 666 be recommended pass.
Senator Marty, on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is a bill that deals with young people who are leaving foster care either because they turn 18 or because they run away because the situation they're in isn't working after age 15. And right now, the counties are required to provide services to a young person beyond age 18 if they stay in the program. But a lot of young people at age 18, they're eager to get out on their own. Their family situation may not be ideal. And this is simply a thing that the counties are required to provide them a contact in case they decide it's not working out. A lot of young people, as parents know, come back into the house, come and go several times at troubled times. These are troubled kids who have had great difficulties. They need some place to turn to at times. This would simply require the counties to work with them to develop a plan on how to get them services. If funds are available, the counties are to provide the services as well. But this is to give the young people who are struggling to make it on their own a chance to have somebody to connect with. The counties were okay with this. They've got a big investment in these young people already. Many of them have had a lot of trouble in their lives, and counties have put a lot of money in. A little bit of extra help between age 18 and 21 will help them get their feet on the ground. So I urge your support.
Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion, Senator Roebling? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to urge support for this provision. I know a lot of young adults who are not ready to be on their own at 18 years of age. And most of us who have children who are young adults know that they still need a lot of parental support and adult help. And some of these young people just have nowhere to go. And I think that Senator Marty's provision will at least set up some kind of a plan so that they know where they can go to if they fall into trouble and need some extra help. And like he said, if there's funds available, the counties could provide some funding for that help, but it doesn't mandate that. But at least it allows them to try and lend a helping hand to these young adults, many of whom are in troubled situations.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Marty, I know that your bill doesn't require, but it certainly anticipates additional costs on the part of the counties to provide these services. If there are going to be services provided, there will be some cost to that. And I do have some concern about this in that what we're talking about here are people who are legal adults, and we're anticipating or suggesting that they're not really fully prepared to be adults, and yet we don't contemplate suggesting that their rights as adults ought to be curtailed in any way. And so I'm just concerned here that we're setting the precedent to continue a dependency on a state program further on in life past age 18. And so I have some concern about this because I think that while you don't specify requiring there to be any services done, it clearly anticipates that they will be, and there are costs to those services. And I also just don't know that this is a good direction to say to people, 18 is not the age of maturity, not the age of adulthood, unless we're willing to say that there are other things that typically accrue to people at age 18 that ought to also be delayed if they're not prepared to live on their own. Should they be permitted to vote? Should they be permitted to form contracts? Should they be permitted to do other things? I just am not fully supportive of this direction. I think there are costs here that will be accrued to the taxpayer.
Further discussion, Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, this actually saves money because, first of all, my kids are college age and beyond, and I know they kind of come home at times and they need support at times. These are kids who don't have the advantages of a stable family. They've been bumped around many times, and they have no place to turn. Illinois found out by taking care of kids until they're 21, they're twice as likely to finished to complete their high school degree, 38% reduction in teen pregnancy for 19-year-olds when they have this kind of support. So it does save a lot of money. Again, every kid needs some place. It's not like they turn 18 and magically they're ready for facing the whole world. They are out on their own. A lot of these kids have been out on their own for a number of years, but they're facing a lot of troubles that other kids don't face, and this is very basic stuff. The counties actually recognize they think they'd save a lot of money if they had the money to provide more services to young people like this. So, yes, there's a cost to doing this. The counties recognize that, but they also know if you don't take care of these kids, if you don't give them the extra support, much more likely to get in trouble with the law, much more likely to have unintended pregnancies, much more less likely to finish school. So I think this is actually it's kind of a helping hand for some kids who need extra help, and I urge support.
Further discussion, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Marty, I have the same concern that Senator Hahn has. I understand that the Minnesota Council of Child Caring Agencies supports this bill, and I guess why wouldn't they? Maybe to look at it in a cynical way, it makes sure that their programs continue for a number of years per individual young person. But my question is when do we stop the dependency? Granted, these children are in need of foster care, but the question I have is this would eventually extend this coverage past 21 years of age, and I'm sure in another couple years, if there's one or two kids that haven't quite adjusted to adult life, well, then we'll have the next phase from maybe age 22 to age 30. When does it all stop? And, I think it's the responsibility of parents to certainly prepare your child for adult life, but it's also the responsibility of foster care parents to do exactly the same thing. I understand that in the future, at least according to my review that I have in front of me, that the local agency is to develop a specific plan related to the foster child's vocational, educational, social, or maturing needs, and then ensure that any foster care, housing, or counseling benefits are consistent with that plan. That sure sounds to me like mission creep to me. And we're going to continue to keep growing this element of government. I'm a little concerned about that when we have families that don't have jobs, they don't have other things, and if the majority party had their way, there'd be a $2 billion tax increase starting in the next few months on the very same people. There comes a time when we have to provide our compassionate hand, but there's also a time to make sure that we begin to slow down the mission creep in our government programs. And I'm just very leery of what this precedent will establish.
Further discussion, Senator Marty.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, the Bush administration provided a lot of funding for states to try and help address the needs of these kids in the 18 to 21-year-old range because they recognize this as well. Again, I just want to stress with my own kids, if they came back to me at age 19 or 20 or 21, I'm not going to say, forget it, you're an adult now. I mean, you try and give them the help and support they need. And yes, it'd be wonderful if all the foster care situations worked out well. A lot of these kids have had a lot of troubled lives, and foster care can provide some support, but not always. Again, kids who run away, this covers kids who ran away from child care because they couldn't take it, because there was abuse or some other problem or they couldn't handle it. This is just to give kids, we want to give our own kids the best support we can possibly give them. These are kids who didn't have that stable home, didn't have the support they need. This will save a lot of money in the future. I think that's why it's had bipartisan support. That's why the Bush administration provided funding for counties to do it. It's important. And I agree. We want kids to grow up. That's every year of their lives. You try and help give them the ability and the skills they need so they're going to make it on their own. But when a kid is struggling and slipping and so on, and they say, please, I need help. I think the least the counties can do is what they're asked to do here, is that is to sit down with them and develop a plan and help them find it. And if the counties have the resources, they can do more than that. But to just sit down with them and try and make sure their lives are on the right track.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Marty renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 666 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill is number 30 on general orders, Senate File 537, Senator Lantz.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 537 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on your bill, Senator Lantz.
Mr. Chairman and members, when persons apply to higher education institutions for a degree program, they anticipate that when they graduate, they will be able to go ahead and look for a job in their chosen field. But sometimes they have criminal convictions in their background that they find out later will prohibit them from getting licensed or certified or make it particularly difficult to find a job in that field. We heard testimony in committee that sometimes they don't even find this out until they've almost completed the degree program or after they've completed the degree program, which turns out to be a tremendous waste of their money, their time, and public resources in education. This bill would require that the educational institution provide notice to incoming students, to all applicants, that there may be, if they have a criminal history, that they should look into whether or not they will be able to be licensed or certified to get a job in their chosen field. This bill passed without dissent in the committee, and I ask for your support here today.
Further discussion on Senate File 537. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Lantz, you may remember that you had a bill with similar language last week, and there was some language that was omitted, and in order to correct that problem, I had offered an amendment which you accepted, as well as Senator Pappas, who is following the issue closely. This is, I think this is similar language, is it not? Or almost exact language?
Senator Lantz.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, this bill is the exact language that was in the Omnibus Higher Education Bill, I think I know what amendment you're going to offer, and it's a friendly amendment. I certainly would accept it and encourage members to do so.
Mr. Chairman, as a result, I'd like to introduce the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the Limmer A1 amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 537 as follows, page 1, line 7. This is amendment A-1.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Lantz and members, the A1 amendment makes reference when someone who may have a past historical criminal record and they're wanting to pursue a career and they're wanting to take an education program, perhaps toward a degree, that we in the original language suggested that perhaps there's not a career opportunity for them because of their history. And in the event that the educational institute for some reason didn't give a warning to it, that they would not be held liable for failing to provide that notice. Senator Lantz, that's the amendment as it is, and I'll stand for any further questions if there are any.
We're on the Limmer amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. We're on Lantz. Motion as amended. Further discussion? Senator Lantz renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 537 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders, number 57, is Senate File 556. Senator Lorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 556 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on your bill, Senator Lorry.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. This is a Department of Transportation agency bill banning certain activities at rest areas, but it's not what members might think. It's really geared toward littering that has been a source of constant problem at our rest areas. And so there has never been anything on the books that actually prohibited this other than a generic reading of our littering statutes. So this is specific for rest areas, and it requires that disposal of travel-related trash is in approved containers. It prohibits dumping of household or commercial trash, prohibits draining or dumping RV waste, prohibits consuming alcoholic beverages except as approved, or stopping and parking continuously for over 6 hours. It is a petty misdemeanor except the drinking part, which is a full-blown misdemeanor. That is the extent of the bill, and I would appreciate members' support. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 556. Further discussion, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if Senator Lori would just yield for a question. On the alcoholic beverage situation, and particularly, say, let's just say you're in a motorhome. You pull into that motorhome, or you pull into the rest area with your motorhome, and mom and dad might want to share a bottle of beer. Would that be illegal under this?
It is, except in accordance with 169A.35. You know, basically, you're in a motor vehicle in the RV. You're still pretty much on the highways. I'm not quite sure to the exact answer of your question. I could have to ask somebody for some help with that one.
Senator Sedgwick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lori, and maybe just take it away from the motorhome then and put it to the picnic table. Could you not have a glass of beer on a picnic table in a rest area and under this bill?
Senator
Lori,
I do believe that while you're on our public highway system with the rest areas set up for safety and rest, you would not be able to consume alcohol on your travels.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lori, is that the way it is in law now, or is that what would occur if this law were passed?
Senator Lori.
I think that this would be a this would be consistent with current law. How it would be interpreted is more of a clarification of how, you know, a highway patrolman or so would react to somebody stopping on the side of the highway and having a drink on their travels. I mean, I think that this is more of a clarification. We did not have a great deal of discussion on this item within any of the committee stops we had. But, yeah, I think that you would not be allowed to stop on the side of the highway and have a drink.
Senator Sedgwick.
Mr. Chair, you know, although I wouldn't do this, I can tell you there are a lot of people from southern Minnesota that travel to northern Minnesota, and I'm talking about, you know, if you will, the guys that they're going fishing, and they might just simply want to stop at a rest area and dig into the cooler and have one before they move on. And I don't know, it seems to me that's the culture and the fabric of Minnesota in some great ways, and we shouldn't. We shouldn't get in the middle of that, as long as they don't leave intoxicated, obviously. But, alcoholic beverages are legal. It just seems to me at a picnic table, at a rest stop, it's not going to hurt a lot of people.
Senator Corey.
Well, Mr. President, I just want to reiterate what I've said time and time and time again. Don't we have enough laws? My God, people can't do anything anymore, and they're breaking the laws. I just let's slow down with the laws. We're becoming a police state. You can't go anywhere, and there's a camera watching you. You can't do anything, and it's getting ridiculous. You know, you should go out and talk, members, to your constituents. Because I don't think my constituents are the exception, but they're just saying enough with the laws. You know, just because you get here, that doesn't mean you have to introduce more laws. people aren't safe when we're in session. My God, let's just stop with the laws. Vote against this.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Senator Lurie would yield. The thing that I'm confused about is apparently it has been illegal to consume alcohol at the rest stops already, but I'm wondering if the change is that we are making it a misdemeanor rather than a petty misdemeanor, because it says that the having the alcohol at the site would be a misdemeanor, and everything else that is being prohibited remains a petty misdemeanor. So I'm trying to figure out if that is a change and what the difference in the penalty is between a petty misdemeanor and a misdemeanor.
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, thank you for the question. I think this is more of a clarification. The rest areas are part of our highway system, and none of these issues have been specifically addressed in law before. I think this has been the interpretation by our law enforcement community. You can't stop on our highway system and have a drink. This is actually putting it specifically in law. My understanding is that it would have been a misdemeanor within our highway system maintained by the Department of Transportation, that you would not be able to drink on our public highway system. I don't see this as a major departure from how we're doing. This is really what we're putting in law. This was intended to get at mostly littering, you know, the dumping of refuse. And actually, it was brought to me by the Department of Transportation. Maybe I'll give members a little bit of history on this. The Department of Transportation sent me this bill over the interim with some pictures of some of the abuses of our rest areas that had been very personal to me. Up on Highway 23, the Evergreen Memorial Drive, Veterans Memorial Drive, there's a scenic overlook where we encourage people to stop and pay respects to fallen veterans. And there is a dumpster there that every single time I stop is full of household refuse. Refrigerators, I saw a carcass there of an animal one day. Car parts, people are really taking advantage of our rest area system, and it is something that has bothered me a great deal. When I got this email from the Department of Transportation asking, is anybody else bothered by this? I was actually very bothered and was happy to help them craft this language. And so it's really a matter of taking what has been happening and trying to make sure that there is something specifically drafted to allow them to enforce these restrictions at the rest areas. And I would urge members for their support.
Senator Day.
Mr. President and Senator Lurie, it seems that somewhere I think you have to do something to kind of change your bill a little ways. How are we going to do outstate people? What, where the welcome to Minnesota is, you'll then have some sign underneath it. It'll kind of be like outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, when you get to the mountains, you stop your car, and then you read a billboard that says you can't do this, 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 and this, and then you can continue down into the mountains. But what about people from out of state? So they're going to, if they stop at the, I can't imagine a Texan pulling his minivan in and having a beer at the picnic table and somebody giving him a ticket for it. I mean, maybe Minnesotans, maybe we're that such nice people that we'll just kind of take it and say, oh, how much do you want, and write them out. But I will tell you, there's some other states that it just doesn't seem workable. And another thing, I will tell you what I personally believe, but I might be totally wrong. I think that rest stops help litter. That's, people got trash and things around their car with their kids, and they're eating some peanuts or whatever. At the trash, at the litter stop is actually where people kind of dump the stuff out. If you ever go through the one anyway on 35W down here, it's full of stuff, and the people pull in there. So instead of somebody throwing a can out the window, they usually will go to a rest stop. So I think there's a couple purposes here that it just doesn't fit, but if we can't have stop and pull over at a rest stop, I don't know.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Lurie,
You can absolutely stop at our rest stops and enjoy yourself. You can throw away your peanut bags with your kids. You can throw away their diapers as you changed their diapers on the road. You just need to do it in the approved containers. You cannot bring your household garbage. You cannot bring your industrial garbage. You cannot stop on our highways, part of our highway system, and have a drink. And under our current law, the criminal penalty, I did find it, is a misdemeanor currently. So that is how it is being enforced today. This is the drinking section of this is merely a clarification of current practice. And these specific prohibitions of dumping are something that I think is a very important step to making sure that our rest areas are used for their intended purpose.
Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, I promise to only go bananas 2 days a week, and today's the third day, so I don't plan on getting too wild. This is ludicrous. This is Senator Lurie. Now think about this. You can't stop by a wayside with your family going to Valley Fair and have a picnic, and the man can't have a beer, or the wife can't have a beer, but the kids can have their pop, but we're saying today's your Valley Fair day, or if they're going to a Twins game, they can't stop in one of our rest stops and have a picnic, and somebody can't have a beer? This is ludicrous. Honest to God, this is. I mean, what are we? Well, I think I'll echo my good friend from Brainerd's words and sit down.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just first of all like to tell the members that Senator Lurie spent a long time on this bill working with the Judiciary Committee. We did go through and looked at some of the language. We had quite a bit of discussion on this bill. We made a few changes to the bill. We worked back and forth quite extensively on this bill. And I would just, at least from going back again and reading 169A.35, the reference there, I think it's possible, you know, you could look at this as a clarification, or you could look at this as a tightening up of the law that we have today that tries to make sure that we don't have people drinking and driving while they're in control of a vehicle. This is probably a little bit longer stop than is contemplated under the law right now, but it is someone we know is going to be getting back on our highways and driving, and so we would be tightening up the law in that regard. There is, however, one provision or one sentence, and I think this was maybe just an oversight because we spent so much time on this bill in Judiciary. There's an oral amendment that I would like to offer if Senator Lurie is okay with this, and I think it comports with his intent on line 1.20, where it says sleep outside a vehicle. I would like to offer an oral amendment that would insert the word sleep overnight outside a vehicle, just to make it clear that we're not talking about someone who just takes a nap or something like that, stops quickly, but that there was testimony about a problem of people using rest stops as a substitute for a campground or something that would not be the intent of a rest stop. And so that was the reason that the department asked for this provision. But I would like to offer that clarification.
That's a friendly amendment, Mr. Chair.
Clerk, Secretary will report the Olson amendment.
Senator Olson M. moves to amend the Lurie amendment to Senate File 556 as follows. On page 1, line 20, after sleep, insert overnight.
On the amendment, do you concur with the amendment, Senator Lurie? All those in favor on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sedgham, on the
amendment. I don't want to be like Senator. Well, maybe I do want to be like Senator Day, but I mean, like, what's overnight? You know, the trucker pulls in at 2 o'clock in the morning, needs a couple of hours of sleep. I mean, I'll tell you, go down to I-90, go all over the state of Minnesota. There are trucks, and there are trucks, and there are trucks in there, and they purr all night, if you will, and people are getting some sleep. And I, you know, how is an enforcement agent supposed to know what overnight means? I mean, is it like 7 in the evening till 7 in the morning? I mean, I think we're just doing stuff here to confuse everybody. And I go back, well, I got to stay on the amendment, but I don't think simply the term overnight is definitive enough to offer a lot to this bill other than just more confusion.
Senator Mr. Chair. Lori, on the Olson Amendment.
Well, I mean, I guess I think that the amendment is friendly. I do concur. And just to Senator Senjum's point, thank you for bringing that up. And there is an exemption built in to the sleeping portion for trucks complying with needing to pull over and get the sleep. That is one of the intended purposes of our rest areas, again, is public safety. And so they do have the ability to pull over and get their sleep and rest and be safe on their travels.
On the Olson Amendment, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, we're on the Senate File 556 as amended. Further discussion? Senator Senjo.
Mr. Chair and members, and I just go back, more than likely, at least for my city, there were cars leaving last night, cars leaving yesterday afternoon with boats on them, and they're, you know, and their SUVs and all that, and there's probably four guys in there, and they're going up to Bemidji, or they're going up to the Lake of the Woods, and yeah, they got a cooler in the back, or it's in the boat, and they're going to stop at a rest stop, and they probably will have one. But to think that along the way, perhaps a week from today, they might call me as their senator and say, you know, we stopped at a rest stop, we had a beer, and we got a misdemeanor ticket, or we got worse. I don't know what it is. I mean, it just absolutely ludicrous. And as Senator Day says, welcome to Minnesota, if you're from out of the state. This makes no sense at all. It would almost like plead with Senator Lori, set this aside, let's get this fixed up, let's make at least common sense. And then we go forward. I certainly agree with anything that's in this bill. It has to do with litter and so on and so forth. But there's things here which are way out of bounds in terms of the general conduct of people. And let's not make criminals out of people that are simply going fishing up at Bemidji, up at Lake of the Woods, up at Vermilion, or wherever they might be. I mean, if you're from southern Minnesota, you know the rest stops you stop. You know the places you do this. And now I come to find out as a 7-year senator that I've been a criminal all along. So I guess that's the way it is. I'll have to just admit it.
Okay, further, Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I think maybe we should just close them. I think that's what we're trying to do is give people reasons not to go. I thought the whole reason of having a rest area was if you were a traveler and you needed to stop, and maybe it was to have a lunch or a picnic or something along the way. And Minnesota should be welcoming people like that. I don't think that we should assume that everybody is there to violate the law. And I don't think that it's a fair assumption that somebody who might consume an alcoholic beverage is intending to drive. There are all kinds of passengers who might want to have a beer along the side of the road, get in with a safe driver, and get back on Minnesota's roads. So I think, how much money are we going to spend in policing this? And writing citations and arresting people for misdemeanors. Is this really how we want to use our government resources? Is focusing so much on people who might want to rest along the roadway? I myself have stopped for rest at a restway when I was driving back from Brainerd. It was late. We're supposed to be inviting people to these areas, and we shouldn't assume that they want to violate the laws or they want to dump their trash. I think that we should either have them the way they are, or we should just close them, and maybe Senator Lori could just offer the bill to just close them all together.
Further discussion? Senator Lori renews his motion when this...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sedgwick.
Mr. Chair, we just got to vote on this. If I could do an oral amendment to eliminate lines 115 and 116 And for the members' benefit, that just has to do with the consumption of alcoholic beverages or the possession of open containers of alcoholic beverages in a rest area. I just think that's foolish. It's not Minnesotan. It's not who we are. And so let's not put in the law something that reflects who we aren't, frankly. And let's see if we can get rid of this. Let's have a roll call vote, and we'll see where they fall.
I will have a roll call, but Secretary will report the Senjum amendment.
Senator Senjum moves to amend Senate File 556 as follows. On page 1, lines 1.15, delete lines 1.15 and 1.16.
Senator Laurie on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And once again, I would oppose this amendment. I think that it would be tantamount to telling our Department of Transportation that as part of our public road system, you guys need to maintain a drinking stop for people. And I don't think that it's outlandish for us to say that our our public highway systems, the safety of our public highway systems is not enhanced by providing a place for people to stop and drink. This is not something that is an outlandish statement. It is a clarification of how the existing open bottle law is actually interpreted in this state, and it is stays a misdemeanor as it is under current law, and would oppose this amendment.
Senator Senjum, I'm told we need a couple more words on your amendment. The Secretary will report.
In addition to deleting lines 1.15 and 1.16, on line 1.21, delete everything after misdemeanor and delete line 1.22.
Okay. Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, if you need concurrence with that, that would be my amendment.
Okay. We'll add that to your amendment. Senator Day.
Mr. President, I hope everybody backs Senator Senjum, because this is, I don't know where the proposal came from, but whoever proposed it. Think of this. So somebody is from Dallas, Texas, and he's coming up here, and his family has a picnic. I'm beginning to think I maybe am a little strange, I guess, but I'll admit that now, because I have went on picnics with my kids where I've drank beer and they've drank pop. And I'll be honest with you, I usually have one beer and that's it. But you know what? I've also done that in Tennessee and California and Texas and New Hampshire and probably about every other state in the United States also. That is not uncommon for families to go on trips. Now, I'll tell you something else. What's the difference between being in downtown Minneapolis or St. Paul or Edina or Rochester and being in the local park? And you go to the picnic and he's drinking and now he gets in his car and he's going to drive home after the Sunday picnic. Or the family reunion that we all get together and we drive to Lake City, Minnesota, wonderful Lake City, Minnesota. Don't see Murphy in the chambers, but anyway. And we go to Hoekskalaw or whatever the name of it is, beautiful park over there. We have a couple beers, play a little volleyball, and now I drive home? What? I don't get it. I hope that we jump on board with Senjum and just make it a little milder.
Senator Olsen, we're on the Senjum amendment. Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to read, I believe it's one, I got to turn the page here. It's 169A35, subdivision 2, drinking and consumption. Crime described. It is a crime for a person to drink or consume an alcoholic beverage, distilled spirit, or 3.2% malt liquor in a motor vehicle when the vehicle is upon a street or highway. I believe this legislation is clarifying that a rest area is part of the highway system. So I think this Senator Laurie's bill falls right in line with current law. It's just a clarification.
Okay, Senator Laurie.
Senator Olsen is correct, and Senator Day said, once again, he didn't know where this bill came from. This is an agency bill. It was brought to me by the Department of Transportation. And this was part of a clarification. It actually drew absolutely no discussion in any of the committee stops, but here we are.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, members, I rise in support of Senator Senjum's amendment. In response to Senator Olsen's citation to 169A.35, that would still apply. That prohibits the consumption of alcoholic beverages in the vehicle. But the bill before us is broader than just in the vehicle. It would apply to the entire rest area. And I don't think that it would do any damage to the open bottle law or the law that prohibits driving while intoxicated to allow passengers or even a driver, if they are stopped on a trip, to have a beer at the picnic table or somewhere else in the rest area. All of the other current statutes would continue to apply regarding alcohol consumption. So I don't see that this would pose any particular danger to public safety. I'd encourage members to support the amendment.
Further discussion on the Senjum amendment. Secretary will take the roll. We should be voting. There's 9 people excused from today's session, but there's, what, 5 left in the chambers that should be voting. Nobody said that. I understand that. I just think people should be voting. If you don't want to vote, we're going to close her pretty soon. you're elected to probably vote, but if you don't want to, all right. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 26 ayes, 25 nays. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on the Lori bill. Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, well, I have an amendment coming up here, so I guess I'll yield to Senator Jungbauer, but I just wanted to keep this bill going for a little bit because I've got an amendment coming.
Why don't you progress the bill and let Senator Murphy...
Mr. Chair, I'm going to progress Senate file, whatever, okay. 556.
Senator, the next bill under discussion. Saw Senator Moore a minute ago. Is she... okay, we'll skip that for a second. The number 100 on general orders, Senate file 1810. Senator Scheid. Senator Moi, are you ready? Senator Moi.
Mr. President, I've been trying to stand, but since you can't, it seems like you can't see me, I'm going to step on my footstool to see if I'm
okay.
A little bit taller.
Can we see the senator? Everybody's here.
Thank you. Thank
All
you.
Right.
Thank you.
Senator
Mr.
Bois.
President, members, I move, Mr. President, I move that when this committee do arise at Senate file, let's see, Senate file 412. Can I do Senate file? Senate file 412 be recommended to pass.
Okay, Senator Bois, on your bill.
Mr. President, members, Senate file 412 is the was brought to me by the Uniform Law Commissioners. It is the uniform law on guardianship and jurisdiction. Due to increasing population mobility across the U.S., cases involving simultaneous and conflicting jurisdiction over guardianship are increasing. And even when all parties agree, steps such as transferring guardianship to another state can require that the parties start over from scratch in the second state. Furthermore, obtaining recognition of a guardian's authority in another state in order to sell property or to arrange for residential placement is often impossible. So the Uniform Commissioners have made the recommendation, and the language that we'll be adopting, this Uniform Act, addresses many problems relating to multiple jurisdiction, transferring out of state recognition, and issues related to that. This act, Mr. President, members, has been endorsed by the AARP, the Alzheimer's Association, the American Bar Association, particularly the Elder Law and Probate and Trust Sections, the Conference of Chief Justices, the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, the National College of Probate Justice, the National Guardianship Association, the State Guardianship Association, the Minnesota Association of Guardianship and Conservatorship, and a number of other organizations on this list that is just too long to read. So, members, this is just the Uniform Guardianship Bill. There are a number of sections in the bill, but it basically breaks down into three parts. The first part deals with jurisdiction. The second part deals with transfer of the guardianship. And then the third part deals with uniform definitions to make sure that all the states are uniform in interpreting those definitions. So I yield for any, I stand for any questions.
A further discussion on Senate File 412, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Ma, would you yield for a question? Thank you, Senator Ma. Could you tell me if the guardian community, are they in agreement with this law, or is there a dispute within their own ranks?
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, there are a number of guardian-type bills that are coming through. This is one where everyone is in agreement on because this is a uniform one.
Okay, thank you. Senator, further discussion. Senator Mois renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 412 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on the General Orders, number 100 on General Orders, Senate File 1810, Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1810 be recommended to pass.
Senator Scheid, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 1810 came to me from let me just make sure I've got the right group here, from a section, the probate and trust law section of the bar, and it is establishing a uniform disclaimer of property interests act, and it's actually replacing two other uniform acts. Everything will be combined into one act, and it has to do with disclaiming an interest that may pass to you as a result of a will or a trust. It's used when people want, for example, a grandfather sets up something to move to his wife upon his death, and then it would go to his son. If the son decides he really doesn't want the property but would like it to move to the grandchildren, he could disclaim that interest. It was as if it was never created in the first place. So it's important to have this be uniform, and states around the country are adopting this. And it's important to those who do estate planning and also to trustees of trusts or beneficiaries, heirs, and other devisees, so that it will be much easier and much more clear what it means when you disclaim an interest in, for example, property. So that's it. I appreciate your support.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 1810, Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Scheid, I don't know if you're aware, but I have an aversion toward making anything uniform law. And I've tried to figure out, could you tell me how many states are adopting this uniform law? So I should have asked Senator Mois that in the last bill. But how uniform is this uniform application across the country?
On the uniform
Mr. Chairman, I can name them for you: Arizona, Arkansas, District of Columbia, Florida, Hawaii, Indiana, Iowa, Maryland, Massachusetts, Nevada, New Mexico, North Dakota, Oregon, and Virginia. So pretty good cross-section of the country. And, Mr. Chairman, I would say, Senator Limmer, this will make it easier and more clear when people are wishing to disclaim an interest. And that is helpful, I think, to them and to all the beneficiaries, for example, or all the heirs.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Scheid, I quickly counted as you went down that list. I think there were 14 state jurisdictions, including the District of Columbia. So your uniformity is only representing 29% of the states. And I was just wondering, if I don't understand why certain lawyers that come here, they're a member of a uniform board or agency of some sort, and they suggest to us to get on board with a uniform law, and then they don't allow us to amend their suggested law in judiciary committees because it's uniform and we can't have any changes. So I'm always a little hesitant to accept a uniform suggestion when we as a state cannot alter or amend it, because the very process of having a uniform act is to have it the same. And so for that purpose, I probably will be
voting against it.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, the Uniform Law Commissioners, each state has, I think, a couple of members. I believe it was explained to us that if you get appointed as a Uniform Law Commissioner for like 10 years or something like that, you become a permanent member. And then the governor of that state gets to appoint a commissioner to the Uniform Law Commissioners, to the Uniform Law Commission. And the intent is for the Uniform Law Commissioners to meet periodically to look at different areas of law where it is certainly within the purview of the different states to pass different laws regarding those particular areas. However, in areas like child custody or in adult guardianship, because 50 different states have 50 different sets of laws, sometimes as people move around, it makes it difficult for the different orders to be recognized from one state to the next. So we've moved in that direction, say in child custody law. We now have uniform child custody law in place. There are aspects of it in place to help govern the transfer of the different custody orders from state to state. So when the uniform commissioners get together and they put a uniform law model together, the intent is that for the different states to take a look at it and if it will be helpful to them, for them to pass it. And for Minnesota, I think that it's been our history that's been beneficial for us to whenever there's been a uniform law proposed, for us to be a part of that movement, because then it makes it easier for our populations, particularly in a cold state like Minnesota, when we have a lot of seniors who like to live in other warm areas of the state, different parts of the time, or in some other areas like child custody. It's just helpful to be a uniform state so that it isn't so difficult for our citizens to be able to exercise some of their rights in other states as if they were here at home. So it makes sense. Sometimes if it doesn't make sense, then the committees take a second look at it. But in my experience, in most of the uniform laws that we've proposed, it's been beneficial to Minnesotans for us to move in that direction.
Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Limmer, you might remember in the Judiciary Committee when this bill was being discussed, your caucus's researcher, Ms. Michelson, caught a statement in the materials that said that this is the most comprehensive disclaimer statute ever written. So it's pretty good.
Okay. Senator, any further discussion? Senator Moab moves. Scheid, excuse me. Renews your motion when this committee do arise. Senate file 1810 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Number 77 on general orders. Senate file 1876. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate file 1876 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on your bill, Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is a MnDOT agency bill, and it primarily is a filled with technical corrections, language changes, language agreements, things that have been missed or unclear from past bills. There are 58 sections to it, and primarily they involve just some minor issues, minor word changes. And with that, I'll yield for any questions.
Okay, sounds pretty good. Any further discussion on Senate File 1876? On this bill? Further discussion on the bill. Well, we
Mr. President.
Further discussion, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the Murphy A1 amendment.
Senator Murphy moves to amend Senate file 1876 as follows. Page 16 after line 10, insert. This is amendment A-1.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a provision that we talked quite a bit about in our transportation committee. And this is some language that we've worked out so that those folks that deliver home heating products during weight restriction times can actually get out to the person's farm or whatever it may be. Currently, what happens is when weight restrictions go on, these trucks that deliver fuel oil, when they run empty, they're over the limit. But, you know, the tank is empty for the person down at the end of the township road, and their house is getting cold. So the choice is, you know, put a couple hundred gallons in the back end of that truck and run it down the road and fill up their fuel oil tank and so that they can, you know, have a warm house, or, you know, they're going to have a cold house. So this language was, we worked on it, and I think that the controversy has worked out of it. As you can see, you know, what we're trying to do with paragraph D down at the bottom is to ensure that those people who haul this product are doing two things. One, they're trying to better schedule their deliveries to folks, because most of the time people are on delivery schedules and they can kind of tell by prior year's usage if somebody is getting kind of low on their tank. And so maybe the proactive call to them and say, hey, it looks like you might only have 50 gallons left. How about I come and fill up your tank before the weight restriction comes on? That's kind of what paragraph TD is trying to do. And the second part of that is that if they do have to deliver, they deliver in the morning when the road and the roadbed is still cold and frozen, so that it minimizes the impact to the road.
On the Murphy amendment, Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I support the amendment.
Okay, all in favor of the Murphy amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Any further discussion on Senate File 1876 as amended? Senator Carlson renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1876 as amended be recommended to pass. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Next bill on the general orders, number 78. Senate File 532, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 532 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on your bill, Senator Rest.
This bill allows email notifications of rulemaking.
Okay. Any further discussion on that email notification bill? Seeing none, Senator Rest renews her motion that when this committee do rise, Senate File 532 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Dibble, can you top that?
I don't know.
Senator, next bill on the general orders is number 45, Senate File 122. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 122 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on your bill, Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair. I'd like to top Senator Rest, but spend just a couple more minutes explaining my bill. I could just say it's a good bill. Vote for it.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, the cocoa bean shell mulch is in recent years become much more widely available. It was a kind of a boutique item that was only available to, you know, very high-end horticulturalists, but it's become much less expensive and it's more widely available in places like Home Depot and the like. And it's a very attractive product. People really like it. It's got a nice texture, a nice color, a very nice smell. However, a little problem has arisen with the widespread use of cocoa bean shell mulch. If it's not processed properly, it retains some of the same elements that we find in chocolate, which is theobromine, which is highly toxic to dogs and cats. And the problem is, of course, it smells very good and it's very attractive. It smells just like chocolate, and some dogs really like to eat chocolate. Coming around, members, is a little bit of media attention that has been paid to an instance that occurred, a very tragic instance in my district, to my constituents with their dog who ingested some cocoa bean shell mulch and died. And I have the toxicology reports and the like here as well from the University of Minnesota that talks about what exactly happened in this instance. So this bill would simply ensure that at the point of purchase, consumers are made aware of this fact. I'm posting a little notice right on the shelf there. It's not required in those instances when cocoa bean shell mulch has been treated and processed and have the theobromine removed. That's my bill, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Dibble, I just can't help but think that there are other products that might be harmful to dogs or cats if they eat it as well. Are we contemplating putting warning signs on other products that are sold to warn people that if their dog or cat eats it, it could be harmful to them? It just seems to me that this is, I certainly don't question the reality that if some dog may eat something that hasn't been processed, they may be harmed by that, but I would think that's true of a number of products as well. Why are we trying to do this on this one, or are we contemplating trying to put warnings on all things that might be harmful to dogs?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is only focused on this particular product because there's a great deal of lack of awareness. It's been recently made much more widely available and much less expensive, and it's been a very popular consumer product. We certainly don't want to reach too far and ban the sale. I don't think that would be warranted or appropriate, but the simple fact is that cocoa bean shell mulch smells like food. It smells like chocolate, and dogs are extremely attracted to it and are very likely to try to eat it. And so we recognize the unique circumstances in this case and simply provide a little notice of warning to consumers so they can be informed when they buy the product.
Senator Hamm.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just think this is really unnecessary to do this when we've got the kinds of problems that we're facing to spend our time doing these things. I mean, chickens. Dogs can eat chickens and die from eating chicken bones. There's all kinds of things that dogs can eat. I just think that the precedent here is a little alarming, that we're going to have retailers required to post signs on products that might be harmful to dogs. You know, people need to be responsible for what they buy and take responsibility to not buy things that might be harmful or other. It just, to me, this is just a little excessive and unnecessary.
So further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Dibble moves to when this committee do arise, Senate File 122 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, there's a list number 2 on your desks. Delete from that number 119, Senate File 536, that's Higgins. Delete 127, Senate File 1489, Ingebrigtsen. And delete 94, Senate File 1462, Prettner-Solin. Otherwise, I designate the rest. I don't believe we'll get through all of these, but we'll work another 15 minutes, maybe up to a half hour, so that Finance Committee can meet.
Senator Pogemiller, apparently the second item, number 118, Senate File 140, needs to be deleted as well, apparently.
Delete 118 also? Okay. Okay, and Mr. Chairman, let's do Tony. Senator Laurie, are you ready for your bill here? Number 1447? Nope. Then why don't we... Yvonne, are you ready? Senator Metzen's waiting for his paperwork. So number 13, 545.
The committee has before it number 13 on general orders, Senate File 545. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Mr. Chair, I recommend that when, or I move that when Senate File 540, when this body do arise, Senate File 545 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 545 is a bill that seeks to further define psychologists' current practices and activities. As discussion continues about healthcare reform with related evolving responsibilities for healthcare professionals, psychologists believe an important step is to assure that current practice is well documented. This legislation has several parts. The first section codifies that psychologists' appeals to health plans for a denial of psychological service receive peer review from a psychologist. The second asks that a psychologist be added to the healthcare Reform Review Council. And the third section reflects the common and longstanding practice for psychologists of discussing with clients what medications they are taking, the dosage, and what sort of effects they are experiencing as a consequence of the medication. Psychologists may subsequently discuss this information provided by the client with the prescriber or in a report. It is important to keep in mind that this in no way expands the scope of practice by psychologists, nor is it related to prescriptive privileges for psychologists. And with that, I hope to have your support for Senate File 545, and we'll stand for questions.
Is there discussion on Senate File 545? Seeing none, Senator Prettner-Solon moves within this committee to arise. Senate File 545 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Metzen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1408 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Metzen.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is a public safety bill that makes it a crime to shine laser light into the cockpit of airplanes or helicopters. This was brought to me by a state patrol officer who happens to live in the district I represent. He flies a helicopter for the Minnesota Highway Patrol. And all it takes is a brief moment of exposure to one of these visible lights into the cockpit to cause discomfort and temporary visual impairments to with such a glare. And again, this causes serious risk to the safety of the aircraft pilot and those on board. But the FAA indicated there were 200 reported cases of laser aimed at aircraft in 2008. But yet federal law makes it pretty difficult to prosecute those who willfully point lasers at aircraft. So I've received letters of support from the legislation from the Airborne Law Enforcement Association, Minnesota Business Aviation Association, and the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Ask for your support.
So further discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Metzen moves when this committee to arise, Senate File 1408 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. We are not going to be taking up number 124, Senate File 1447. The next item we have before us, Senator Higgins, is she in the chamber? Senator Saxog. We have next number 98 on general orders, Senate File 707, Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 707 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today I'm presenting Senate File 707. This bill allows a 911 operator to make a referral to a mental health crisis team where available and specifically appropriate. Mental health crisis teams are now available in every county for adults and most counties for children. There was no dissenting vote in the Judiciary Committee on this bill. These services have mental health providers available to assist a person, child, or adult who is having a mental health crisis. Mobile teams are available in many parts of the state. My home county, Itasca County, teams work with police, 911 operators, and EMTs in their area. This will allow it to be statewide. Anytime we have a mental health response instead of a criminal justice response, we have better outcomes and more effective use of resources. Appreciate your support, and I stand for questions.
Is there discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Saxog moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 707 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. The next item is number 138 on general order, Senate File 474. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 474 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a pretty simple bill on toy recalls. It's bringing state language into the same conformity with federal language. When a recall does take place, this bill prohibits retailers from selling any toy that has been recalled, and the federal law already prohibits this activity.
Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Scogin moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 474 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Higgins has indicated that she does not want to progress her bill, Senate File 1217, number 54 in general order, so we will not be taking that bill up. The
Saxon, did you
Senator
do
Clark.
Yes.
Senator Clark. Senator Clark.
Clark,
did you want to take up your bill? We have before us number 102 on general orders, Senate File 1794, Senator Clark.
Are you doing yours or not? Did you skip more?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. We'll back up one. Number 95. We have not before us number 95 on general orders, Senate File 1096, Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. President. I did not stand up on my little footstool, so I believe that's why you didn't see me.
I couldn't see you. Yes.
Yes. Mr. President, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1096 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate File 1096, this is the revisor's bill. You all recall that every session we do two revisor's bill, one at the beginning or during the legislative session, to address any kind of cross-references or to take out obsolete languages, technical issues that the revisor has identified in the previous year. And then at the end of the legislative session, we do a revisor's bill as the very last bill on the final night of the session to address any cleanup of bills that were passed during that legislative session. This bill is the revisor's bill looking at languages in the statute from last year or from previous years. Mr. Chair, I have three small changes that is in the A51 amendment that I'd like to make to the revisor's bill.
The Secretary will report the A51 amendment.
Senator Moore moves to amend Senate File 1096 as follows. Page 5 after line 18, insert. This is Amendment A51.
On the amendment, Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, the A51 amendment has three sections. There's a Section 10, a Section 30, and a Section 62. Sections 30 and 62 were amendments were adopted in committee, but were inadvertently omitted from the committee report and engrossment. Section 10 is an additional correction that was just recently brought to the attention of the revisor's office. Section 10 cites to a section of the Internal Revenue Code which was mistakenly cited, and it just changes it to the appropriate or to the correct citation. I believe that there was a member of the public who was looking at this statute of the law, and they noticed the change in the cross-reference. So we just want to make sure that that get added into the bill.
There's a discussion on the A51 amendment. Senator Olsen.
Would Senator Moore yield?
She will yield.
Senator Moore, I just have a question on Section 62, and that is how would somebody find out if somebody is not able to purchase a dog under this requirement?
Senator Moore.
Ms. Chair and Senator Olsen, what requirement are you referring to? This is just corrects is a cross-reference that was inaccurate. We're not changing anything substantive in the law. So they would just go to the statutory section.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Moore, though, in the practicality of this, though, you know, if somebody buys a dog, I don't want to sound like my friends across the aisle, but are there dog police, or who's going to make sure that somebody buying a dog hasn't been convicted of all of these violations?
Well, Senator Olsen, the correction that's being made on page 2.2 of the amendment is changing the statutory reference from 346.515 to 347.515. That's the change that is being made in Section 2, or in the subdivision that you're referring to. Senator Moore? Further discussion on the A51 amendment. Seeing none, Senator Moore moves the A51 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A51 amendment is adopted. Senator Moore? Anything further? Further discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Moore moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1096 as amended be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Now we have before us number 102 on general orders, Senate File 1794. Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 1794 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Moore, or Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill was brought to us, to Senator Saltzman and myself, by a constituent of mine. Major Brady Hughes was deployed to Basra, Iraq last week with the Red Bulls 34th Infantry Division. Major Hughes teaches at Apollo High School in St. Cloud and has spoken with his Guard colleagues who are also educators. He found that the law in differential pay was being applied differently across the state. Some school districts were paying a 9-month salary and others were paying a 12-month salary. This interpretation is inconsistent in terms of the law, and it meant some soldiers weren't getting paid the full differential. So in a lot of ways, this is just a clarification. What this bill does is it clarifies current law so that districts apply the pay differential consistently, and it does so by basing the differential on a daily rate of pay versus an annual rate. And I do have one other clarifying amendment that was brought to us by Colonel Allness of the Guard that I believe is at the desk, Mr. Chair.
Is this the A50 amendment? The Secretary will report the A50 amendment.
Senator Clark moves to amend Senate File 1794 as follows, page 2, line 6. This is amendment A50.
On the amendment, Senator Clark.
And all this does is that the bill has co-curricular activities, but it was missing extracurricular, so adds and extracurricular.
Discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, Senator Clark moves the A50 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Thank you. Those opposed, motion prevails. The A50 amendment is adopted. Senator Clark, any further discussion?
No, this bill ought to be helping some of our fellow citizens that are serving get the differential that they should be getting that they have not been.
Is there discussion on the bill? Senator Saltzman?
Here. And just an additional point, Mr. Chair, I just want to express to Senator Clark thanks because Washington County has a number of our citizens deploy with the Red Bulls, and this was an excellent example of being able to communicate with them and us being responsive, and the sooner we pass this bill, the sooner the effective date. So, again, thank you, Senator Clark.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Clark moves that when this committee to arise, Senate File 1794 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item on general orders is number 14, Senate File 729, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 729 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 729 makes some changes to the Hennepin County Human Resources Act. First of all, permitting an involuntarily demoted employee who fails probation to be terminated for cause rather than being returned to the former higher-level job class. It also allows the HR director and department director to establish the length of the probationary period for a job class. Third, it creates a panel of directors to hear alleged non-disciplinary HR rule violations, and it allows the county board to directly approve compensation plans for non-organized employees.
So discussion on the bill. Seeing none, Senator Rust moves that when this committee to arise, Senate File 729 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Marty is not here. The next item is number Senate File 190, Senator Kay Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1910 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, members, this bill includes a variety of technical clarifying provisions from the Department of Commerce regarding licenses regulated by the Department of Commerce. They include things such as license education, payment of license fees, forms, insurance producers, insurance adjusters, real estate brokers, salespersons, real estate appraisers. The sections dealing with insurance producers update our laws to match the current version of the Model Act recommended by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and the sections dealing with insurance adjusters update laws to match current versions of the Model Act and guidelines recommended by the NAIC. I stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dahl, could you tell me if the real estate community, are they in favor of this bill?
Mr. Chair, we did have the testimony in Commerce. There was no opposition, and everybody was on board with this particular bill.
So further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Dahl moves it when this committee to arise. Senate File 1910 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next bill is number 81 on general orders, Senate File 1033. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I move in this committee to rise that Senate File 1033 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is a technical clarifying amendment to make it clear that housing, when government is putting subsidies into it or managing a property, that they are allowed to have a say in the amount of rents charged. In other words, it happened in a case in Roseville where the city put a lot of public money into rehabbing some low-income rental housing, and despite the requirements, the developer decided to jack up the rents and actually kicked out a lot of the low-income people in there. This simply clarifies that not only when they're running it is a public housing authority, but when they're managing or controlling property and giving subsidies to it, that they can keep the rent under control during the period of the subsidy.
Is there discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Marty moves when this committee to arise, Senate File 1033 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee do now rise and report.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate will come to order. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole, as kept by the secretary, be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, aye. The motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller, I believe that completes the work of the desk before the recess. Perhaps we can just get the day-long excused absences out of the way. Senator Stump, Senator Vickerman, Senator Foley, Senator Bonhoff, Senator Rosen, Senator Sparks, and Senator Ingebretson are excused for the day. Senator Frederickson from 11 o'clock until 1 o'clock. Or not for... Okay.
Mr. President, members, good work this morning. I believe members who are not either on the Finance Committee or on the Rules Committee. The rest of the day will just be to process the committee report from Finance and the Rules Committee. So a skeleton crew is all that's necessary. So the only people that still have work to do today are the Finance Committee and the Rules Committee. So I would, we don't know how long the Finance Committee will be with the Health and Human Service bill, but that could be a few hours. So hopefully that bill will process out of Finance. We would then accept the committee report. It would be sent to Rules because it's a late bill. The Rules Committee then would meet and process it, get it to the floor, and then it would get its second reading. We'd be done for the day. So I'd yield for announcements.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, the Finance Committee will meet at 1:30.
So, Mr. President, then I'd move that the Senate recess to the call of the chair.
For that, Senator Sanchin.
Mr. President, could the Majority Leader give us a little idea about Monday at this point?
Senator Sanchin, there's apparently a couple meetings in the morning, so we will come in at 11. I presume then we will recess for caucus, and hopefully the quicker we can do that. All we plan on taking up is the Human Service Bill. If the Human Service Bill went fairly quickly on Monday, I suppose we could clear off some more general orders or maybe take up some of the confirmation calendar. But the only order of business we need to process for sure is the Human Service Bill on Monday. And so we'll come in at 11, recess, and then hopefully get back here by 12:30 or so. So then I'd move that the Senate recess till the call of the chair today.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate is recessed till the call of the chair.
I'm not going to buy what?
No, I'm not going to.
Okay. Dogs can't even read their... I like the dress.
Mr. President?
The Senate will be in order.
Is there
Senator
some work?
Senator,
I believe there might be a committee report.
Reverting to reports of committees, the Secretary will report the...
Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which is referred Senate File 695, a bill for an act relating to human services requiring the commissioner to apply for federal funds, et cetera, reports the same back with recommendation that the bill be amended. And when so amended, the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration. Pursuant to Joint Rule 2.03, the bill was referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration.
What? Okay. Senator Polgemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee... No motion. Okay, so Mr. President, I move that recess to the call of the chair and announce the Rules Committee will meet immediately in room 125.
On Senator Polgemiller's motion to recess to the call of the chair. All in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed? The Senate is in recess.
Mr. President?
The Senate will be in order. Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, is there a committee report at the desk?
Reverting to reports of committees, the Secretary report the committee report.
Senator Pogamiller from the Committee on Rules and Administration, to which was referred under Joint Rule 2.03, together with the committee report thereon, Senate File 695, a bill for an act relating to human services, reports the same back with the recommendation that the report from the Committee on Finance shown in the Journal for April 25th be adopted and that the report be further amended as follows. Page 315, delete lines 6 to 7 and insert. And when so amended, the bill do pass.
Right. Mr. President, I'd move that
Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, I move the committee report just read be adopted.
On Senator Pogamiller's motion, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The report's adopted. Second reading.
Senate File 695.
Second reading.
Mr. President, any other work at the desk?
Senator Pogamiller, there is not.
Announcements? Mr. President, then I'd move the Senate adjourn till Monday, April 27th, 11 a.m.
On Senator Pogamiller's motion that the Senate adjourn till April 27th, Monday at 11 a.m. All in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the Senate is adjourned.